But first today on the show, a broadcasting legend. And this is the first time in a long time we've had two guys in the studio who have so much in common. This gentleman and I both spent many years in Washington, D.C. We also both were at one time employed by the National Broadcasting Company. Right. Now, ladies and gentlemen, here we are on the radio, live together for the very first time again.
Yeah.
Here's Ed McMahon. Hi, Ed.
Hello, Paul. Good to see you, pal. Together again for the first time.
Well,
now,
you know,
we've talked enough on the radio.
We're yes.
like, I'm almost your co-host.
Yes.
You know, I'm here all the time.
The bus tour, by the way, is what brings Ed to St. Louis and to our studio today, and later on a couple of other locations around St. Louis, which I'll tell you about, because he's got this new venture. It wasn't enough for this guy to be involved in every other broadcasting venture in the world. No, he had to go online, too. And he was on with me a couple weeks ago, and he said, you know, I'm coming to town. Let me come in the studio, and we'll talk about it then. So nextbigstar.com
That's it.
Is the next venture for Ed McMahon, who never rests, will never retire.
Never.
On his deathbed, they'll rip the microphone
right.
out of his hand.
Here's my plan, Paul. You know, for years I said, you know, on radio, television. By the way, next year is my 60th anniversary of
wow.
working in radio, and I just celebrated my 50th year, September 12th, on television.
Congratulations.
I'll tell you about that in a minute. But, you know, oftentimes I said, we'll be right back right after this message. I mean,
yes.
that's such a common phrase. If somebody woke me up at 3 o'clock in the morning, I would wake up and say, we'll be right back right after this message. So that's so common. So my plan is, wherever I am, I could be on my deathbed. I could be, you know, in the back of a car, fall out the back of a melon truck. Whatever it is, my last words will be, oh, by the way, I won't be right back. That'll be how it'll end.
That's a great epitaph. Have you put
like that
on the headstone, too.
By the way, no, my epitaph. In my book, I have my epitaph. My epitaph, I want to be. By the way, I don't want to have a tombstone, but and I won't have any if I have anything to do with it. But if I don't have anything to do with it, my epitaph should read, he was a great broadcaster. No, he was a good broadcaster and a great Marine.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I want.
Yeah.
Anyway, I love this business. Why not keep doing it? I mean, I fought like hell to get in this business. You could have taken a team of Clydesdales to keep me out of this business, and I love it. I'm in it. Why not keep doing it? So we were trying to find a gimmick. We were looking for that one little, you know, when you're making a stew, there's one little magic ingredient that you need, a chef needs to make that stew perfect. I had the talent show concept. For 12 years, we did Star Search. We proved our point. All the stars out there are stars that we found
mm-hmm.
in every medium. And I figured, what can I do to get a talent show back on the air? We tried to bring Star Search back. We couldn't get the title. The people that own it, or I was a partner, but the ownership is very strange. I couldn't get the title. So I said, I'm going to get something else. What am I going to get? And I met a guy named Michael Gerber, of all places, down in Orlando, but at Universal Studios. His studio is right down the road from the big Disney complex. Anyway, he said, why don't we do this on the internet and let that be the beginning of the television show?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're doing. So that's why I went on the internet. I mean, I love the internet. I love the whole concept of it. But to be on there with a talent show, so today we're looking for talent at Union Station. We're looking at for talent pets. We're looking for the most popular pet. We're trying to find the best pet there is. Now, it doesn't have to have a trick, necessarily.
It doesn't have to be like Letterman's stupid pet
no,
tricks.
No, not
kind
a
of
stupid
deal.
Pet tricks at all. In fact, I've seen some pretty clever things I'll tell you about in a minute. But what we're looking for is, you know, the most popular, the prettiest, the cutest, the best, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
pet. And a lady showed up yesterday in Kansas City at a Petco store with a llama. And I said, what does the llama do? She says, that's why I brought him. The llama does nothing. So I said, well, okay. So we stood there, and the llama did nothing. I mean, that stoic, you know, like a llama. That's what
yeah.
a llama. He just stood there.
He acts like a llama,
yeah,
which is it.
That's, I mean, the place could be on fire. The llama would just stand there. That was the end of it. Anyway, we're looking for all that stuff. But the idea is that on April 15th, whatever we gather as we're going around, and people can enter on the internet. You can download an application blank.
Right.
But you enter, and whatever we gather goes up on the net. And then for 13 weeks, people vote on the internet. And on July 15th, we have a two-hour internet show, the last hour of which is simulcast on television.
Wow.
And that's where we'll get the people that are going to make it, like I found on Star Search. You know, the Christina Aguilaras, the Britney Spears.
Rosie O'Donnell, right?
Rosie O'Donnell, Drew Carey, Ray Romano, Norm MacDonald, Sinbad, Dennis Miller, Kevin James, Jenny Jones. I mean, you name it. They were on Star Search. And what's great is their people are still out there that talented. I saw a little girl in Oklahoma City, and she had that same twang, that same country western sound that I saw the first time I saw Leanne Rimes.
Really?
Now, Leanne Rimes was 7 when we saw her. And, you know, now she's a major star. I think she's like 16. Or
yes.
Seven, you know, but it's so funny. I'm traveling in a tour bus that I pick up out of Nashville from a group called the Hempel Brothers. Hempel makes all these big tour buses for people. Britney Spears, who we found on Star Search when she was 7, Britney Spears is now on 10 buses. Not quite now. She's just about to start. She's going to go out with 10 of these tour buses.
Wow.
And she's getting so old. What an old-timer.
She's what?
18
years old.
What an old-timer. But I'm going to...
You have grandchildren older than Britney Spears.
I do, as a matter of fact. I have one almost older. I'm trying to get her into Duke University. This is the week I'm sweating out to get that news.
Wow.
Whether she's in Duke. Anyway, what's happening is when I get to Nashville, I'm going to the headquarters, Hempel's headquarters, and I'm going to pull up with my bus, and Sawyer Brown are going to pull up with one of their buses.
Uh-huh.
They have 5 of them. They're going to pull up, and we're going to have a meeting of the buses. We found Sawyer Brown the first year of Star Search, 1984. So we're going to pull up and have like a meeting. We may make a little baby bus out of that. That little meeting could cause a new bus.
Now, when all these people were on Star Search,
yes,
and you're looking for the new ones now, by the way, the website is nextbigstar.com, and I'm going to give you a toll-free number that you can call for information.
I don't worry about you with plugs.
No, I'm there for
you. You're like me, Mr. Plugola.
Well, you know, a guest comes in, I'm nice enough to help him out.
Why not? I mean, that's what I'm doing here.
I'm going to give you a toll-free number in a minute here for audition details on being at Union Station or at Petco later on today, but when you were doing Star Search,
yes,
and you had all these people come through,
right,
no one really knew them unless maybe they'd seen a comedian at a local club or something
that was
like
all,
that.
Yeah.
When you're standing on the side, you're watching these people, did you say to yourself, oh, she has got
it? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, because you see a fire. I saw it yesterday in Kansas City. I saw that fire because what happens is people are so eager to perform. They're so anxious to please. You know, like when you started out in this business, you wanted to be in this business, whatever road you took, but you were anxious to do it. You
mm-hmm.
were really feeling that anxiety about, I want to do it. I want to do it good. I want to be in there. I want to be this guy.
It's an obsession.
Sure, it really is. But you see that fire. You see Rosie O'Donnell. Now, they may walk very casually. They may be kind of loose-fitted, kind of in a sense that they're kind of fluid. But the minute they get to that microphone, the minute they get that spot on the stage, all of a sudden, you see that burning desire to please the audience. And when you see that in a person, like I saw it in Sinbad, for example, you know right away. I was on The Tonight Show with Johnny way back in New York in the early, early days, and a guy walked out, and he started doing a performance. And I saw him about maybe 15 or 20 seconds into that performance, and I just saw that eagerness to tell this story. And when he was finished, I walked over to my manager, who happened to be there that night, in the next commercial break, I walked over and I said, this guy is going to be a major star. Sign him immediately. So then I had to go back and do the show. When the show was over, I said, did you sign him up? And he said, oh, are you kidding me? He's already got a manager.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Cosby.
Wow.
Right? Now, you see Cosby, and you look at him, and you say, well, he's kind of gangly. He's got that kind of funny walk, and he kind of lumbers along.
Right.
But when he got on stage, and he did what he did was the Noah. That was his thing.
Oh, man.
He did Noah.
Noah,
you know,
in the Ark.
And it was such an unusual performance, because nobody had taken a story idea like that and made that into a comic piece, which
right.
he did, which he happened to write himself. So all those elements were there. You knew Cosby was going to be big,
mm-hmm.
and he was. But I saw it with you know, Barbara Streisand. When Barbara Streisand performed on The Tonight Show, she was sitting on a stool the first night. We had to get her dressed for her. She didn't have a dress to wear on the show. We bought her a black dress. She's sitting on a stool. There are 3 mirrors behind her, and she sang a very obscure song. It was a song from a Broadway play. It was called When a Bee Lies Sleeping in the Palm of Your Hand. And it's not a well-known song at all. It's a beautifully structured song with great lyric quality. But she sang this, When a Bee Lies Sleeping in the Palm of Your Hand. When she finished, there was a silence. The audience didn't do anything. They were in such shock that they'd heard this incredible voice that there's a long pause. Nobody does anything. And then it erupts into great, great applause.
Mm-hmm.
And you said to yourself, There's a star.
There's a star.
The star was born that night.
And have there been times when you've been doing Star Search or other things where the judges voted for what you thought was the wrong person and you had to go over to him and say, oh, you blew it. This guy was much funnier than that guy.
Well, I never corrected the judges, although there was one judge, I'll leave him nameless. All he gave, the highest award he ever gave was 2 stars. Now, I look at this nitwit, and I said, you know, he was a producer, and I said, what in the world is he, why would somebody come on the show and only get 2 stars, you know, when the kind of people we had on there, you know, if you made it to that stage, that was a big deal, and this guy, no matter what it was, 2 stars. And we had incredible people that night that he fluffed off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you think that a few weeks ago, Paul, the American Comedy Awards, my pal Dick Clark, his awards. I look over, and here I see 3 people are up for the same award. Alanis Morissette, Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera,
mm-hmm.
all from Star Search,
mm-hmm.
when they were kids. I go to the Grammys. I interview Britney Spears right after her rehearsal of her performance. Everybody thinks she's going to win the Grammy. She didn't win it. Christina Aguilera won it.
Right.
So here are my 3 little players, you know, running along here. Like, it's like having some Colts like baby Clydesdales, and all of a sudden they're leading the team. You know, here they are. But then I look at all the others. I look at, you know, wonderful people that are coming up. Kevin James, you mentioned seeing somebody and knowing. My wife Pam and I were in a nightclub, a little comedy club in Atlanta. We saw this guy. I saw that round, there's a Jewish phrase, punim. Do you know what the punim
means? It's a face.
A punim face.
Yeah.
I saw his little punim face, and I looked at this guy, and he started to talk, and he had that little, you know, kind of clown-like quality in his structure of his face.
Yep.
I said, this guy's got to be on Star Search. Now he's the king of Queens. He's
right.
got his own very successful sitcom.
Now, all these people that were discovered on Star Search, or who you recognized from Star Search.
Right.
Do they remember you? Do they
thank
you? Do they send you a check every once in a while? A letter, a picture, a lollipop?
I never get any checks. They're still looking for my money. For me, they still want my $10 million.
Yeah, right.
No, I'll tell you what happened. I went to talk to a lot of people. Kevin James couldn't have been nicer. We did a shot outside his studio. Jerry Stiller came out. I interviewed 70 people in the last several weeks. And what I did when I interviewed them, I asked them 2 simple questions. How did you get your start? Who did you admire? Now, you'd be surprised what you get from that. Like I started, I was a bingo announcer. I traveled with a carnival as the bingo announcer to be on a microphone when
mm-hmm.
I was 15. I just wanted to be on a microphone.
Any job with a microphone,
that's right?
Yeah.
That was me. Now, that's what I did. I'm interviewing all these people. Jerry Stiller told me a story I had totally forgotten about. He said, you know how we got started? I said, how? He said, you got us started. I said, what? He said, you emceed an affair for the Catholic Actors Guild. There was an organization in New York, Horace McMahon. I don't remember him. You're not old enough. He was a great actor. A lot of your audience will remember a great show called The Naked City.
Oh, sure. There are 8 million tales
in
the Naked
City. Yeah,
well,
that was the man. Horace McMahon was the older detective.
Oh, okay.
Paul Burke was the young guy. And remember, they quarreled? It was like NYPD Blue
yes.
in the old days. And they would never agree. Paul Burke was the guy who, you know, with technical sophistication, he'd try to solve the crime. Horace McMahon say, no, the girl in the blue dress.
Yeah,
the
my instinct.
Yeah, that's right. That was him. So Horace McMahon used to run an organization called the Catholic Actors Guild. And I was over there doing an MC job, and I saw Stiller and Mira. And Mira and Jerry Stiller. So I went back that afternoon, and I said, I just did a luncheon. And there was a couple on there. They're married. They're the funniest, most clever group. You got to get them on the show. Now, I had forgotten all about that. You know how long ago that was? That was like almost 40 years ago. Jerry Stiller remembered. He said, you got us started in this business. Now I'm interviewing Kelsey Grammer. So I asked the question, you know, how did you get started? So forth and so on. He went to Juilliard. He was thrown out of Juilliard. But he wanted to keep going, so he kept trying. I said, now, who did you admire? You know what he said? Bugs Bunny. I said, what? He said, the timing of Bugs Bunny and Wile E. Coyote. And he said it like that,
mm-hmm.
Wile E. Coyote. But think about it. When you saw Wile E. Coyote, right, you look up and you see the top of the building and the chimney's going to fall off the building.
Right.
Wile E. Coyote looks up, looks at you, and knows the chimney's going to hit him on the head.
Yeah.
That timing is great. Every joke you need, you got to have that timing. You build it up, build it up. then the punchline. Right. Then it's got to come in. So that was who he admired. He watched, and David Hyde Pierce did the same thing. They watched cartoons to get that.
To get the
comic timing.
And now
when you see Frasier and you see that timing, when they don't just tell a joke, they lay it in there like it's carved out of granite.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
So, but that's what I did. 70 of them. Now you can go to the website.
Yeah, you are digitizing these interviews them on NextBigStar.com.
We're encoding everything, digitizing. But you can go to the website, the front page of our website. If you punch it up right now, anybody's got a laptop with them, punch up www.nextbigstar.com. The first thing you'll see is my page and a little circle with Rosie O'Donnell in it. Punch on Rosie O'Donnell and she'll tell you that my oldest daughter, Claudia, who was a talent scout for us, found her in a little club in Long Island. She was going to get out of the business by her next birthday if she didn't make it.
Mm-hmm.
She was fed up. She didn't like these little clubs she was playing. It wasn't working. She was doing old Catholic schoolgirl humor. She was wearing leather like this leather jacket I'm wearing. She was kind of a biker babe, and it wasn't working. But my daughter said, you know, you're very good. We can get you on Star Search. And she said, you know, get away from me, kid. You bother me. But my daughter persisted, and she tells that story, that Claudia convinced her to go on Star Search. Look at Rosie O'Donnell, the queen of daytime television.
Yeah, and it's right there on the website now. Let me get the plugs
in for
you.
Do you let anybody into the studio? I mean, what is this? I mean, I'm here trying to work. Some guy I left this morning at another station.
Yeah.
Some girl had met me at the bus, and she was hanging out there trying to pick up sailors.
Well, you know
what
it is?
And this guy, who is it? Good Lord, wait. Is that the famous Jerry Clinton?
This is the famous
Holy
Jerry Clinton.
Lord, I never thought I'd have there. A chance to meet him. Hi, Jerry. I've heard so much about you.
Jerry,
what
pull
a
that
thrill.
Microphone up towards you.
What
there.
A thrill this is to actually meet you in person. What a day. Dan Dierdorf I met, and now the prince of them all, Jerry Clinton.
Clinton.
What a moment.
My role is the llama.
When I'm with Ed, Ed does all the talking, and I ordered the Budweiser.
That's right. Yeah. Well, let me tell you about a pet I saw yesterday.
Okay.
Scruffy.
Okay.
All right? Scruffy looks like Muffin. You know, Jerry, my dog Muffin, looks just like Muffin. Could be Muffin's brother, right? Here's Scruffy. So Scruffy's there, and I'm fascinated with this dog because it looks like a dog we have. My wife and I have six dogs. But the dog I love the most is Little Muffin, right? Not little, big. He's like a big sheepdog. So I walk over to Scruffy, and I'm petting Scruffy, and the guy says, you want to see what Scruffy does? I says, yeah. He says, okay, Scruffy, it's time for bed. Scruffy walks over, takes out a blanket out of a basket, spreads it out on the ground, gets on it, picks it up and rolls up in the blanket and goes to sleep. I said, that dog's going to win a prize.
Yeah. Put that dog on the website. This is the Big 550 KTRS. I'm Paul Harris. You got to recognize the voice of Ed McMahon and his old pal, Jerry Clinton, who, of course, is one of the investors in the Big 550. So he's here, you know, just making sure I'm not ruining the place. That's what he came in to do. And you happen to be here.
Well, he's going
to
spend the day with me, which is going to be great.
Yeah,
so.
You guys are old friends. How long have you known each other, Jerry?
45 years.
St. Peter was a PFC when Ed and I met.
Now, you guys met in the Marines, is that right?
No. We met, I guess, Ed, I don't know, I suppose back at your LPGA golf tournament in the Quad Cities.
Yeah, but I mean, I started with Anheuser-Busch in 1963, and I worked with them for 30 years.
Right.
So that took me to 1993, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, Gray Eagle became a wholesaler in 1963.
All right, so that's when I met you, right after that at the first Budweiser convention. And, you know, he's the kind of guy that he kind of lays back, but you know he's there.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that about how the station goes on? Anyway, we were fascinated with each other, I think. And I had a golf tournament at the Quad Cities for many years. I hosted, and I'm not a golfer, but they asked me if I would lend my name and host him, which I agreed to do. It was a big charitable affair, so I did it. And Jerry used to take his motorhome up there. And what was nice about his motorhome, it had an incredible gas tank. You could fill it up with gas, and you could go the longest distance because the gas tank was oversized.
Uh-huh.
But he also had another tank in there that was filled with Budweiser. It was amazing how far you could go on a tank of gas that large and a tank of Budweiser. We covered a lot of ground in that little mobile home.
I bet you
the fact
did.
Is, if we ran out of gas, nobody cared.
That's right. As long as we had enough Budweiser, we didn't give a damn.
There you go. Now, I mentioned Marines, and you've mentioned it before as well. Should I be addressing you as Colonel McMahon?
Yes, you may, of course. I'm very proud of that.
Actually, aren't you an honorary Brigadier General?
I'm a Brigadier General in the California Air National Guard. They gave me that designation, which is nice. But a colonel in the Marine Corps is about equal to any general anywhere there is. Okay.
Now,
let me put it this way, how I feel about the Marine Corps. I'm a Marine. I'm not an ex-Marine. I'm not a former Marine. I'm a Marine.
Right.
And here's what it is in the world. No offense. There are Marines and everybody else. All right?
All right. Well, I'll salute you
okay,
then.
Okay, you should. Yeah. If you do it, do it right. The elbow to the fingers must be a straight line. Don't do it like some of the political figures do. They give you a salute. You know, yeah. It looks like you're holding a wet chicken. No, here it is. Elbow to the fingers.
Elbow to the fingers.
And you pull it off your eyebrow.
Gotcha.
Snap it off your arm.
All right, Colonel. I apologize for doing it wrong. Now, take me back, if you would, to your Marine fighter pilot days.
Yes.
Didn't you teach guys how to land on aircraft
carriers?
I did.
That was my job. I was an instructor, and I was a test pilot and an instructor in the famed Corsair. That was the great airplane. For your listeners, if anybody remembers seeing a plane, it was the most unusual plane because it had what they call inverted gull wings. From the body of the plane, the wings went down for about, I would say, maybe 2.5 feet, 3 feet, and then they went up.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason they did that was because the plane was so heavy. It weighed 6 tons, and they couldn't put a landing gear to support this. It would be too heavy to add the landing gear. So the wings went down to meet the landing structure, the landing gear.
Right.
So they could make the landing gear a little lighter. But it was an unusual plane in the air because it had that look, you know, that they call it an inverted gull wing. So anyway, it was the hottest plane in the war. It was at sea level. It would fly 425 miles an hour, which in those times was a very fast. You know, now a plane flies around like commercial airliners are going about 600 miles an hour. So you figure 425 in World War II, that was pretty fast.
Right.
Anyway, when you brought it in on a carrier, you were only 2 knots above stalling speed. And when you came around that corner, when you made that, everything was done to the left in the naval aviation. If you see a carrier, you know the structure is on the starboard side of the plane, starboard side of the ship, because that's clear on the port side. That's where you're coming
in. That's where you come in. Okay.
And boy, do you live on the landing signal officer. You hope he didn't have a fight with his girlfriend, and you hope he doesn't have a headache or a hangover, because he tells you what. You can't look at your instruments. You have to look at him. Like, I'm looking at you now,
yeah,
like a landing officer, the LSO, and I'm coming in, right? And you're telling me, I'm not fast enough. Give me more power.
Mm-hmm.
You're too fast, okay? And then I get the cut. And if you're too low, it's down like this. It's the old signal flags. And if you're too high, you're up like this.
Right.
So it's an automatic thing. Now they have a big thing called the meatball, which all is electronic. But in the old days, you lived and died on this guy. So when he gives you the R, that's the semaphore flags for R, Roger, that means you're in perfect shape, and then you get that cut. Now, when you get that cut, you're 2 miles above stalling speed.
So you're at what speed at this
you're
point?
You're about 84 miles an hour, and the plane, 84 knots, the plane lands at 82.
Okay.
Okay? It stalls out at 82. So what happens? When you just pull the throttle back, and you drop onto the carrier, and then you just, then is when you get, if you haven't been religious all your life, suddenly you become very religious.
Yeah.
Please, God, please let the hook find one of those 7 cables. Please, God.
Yes.
Because if you miss those, if you happen to miss those 7.
You go off the other side into the water, right?
Many of my friends took an early season swim.
Really?
Yeah. And it's quite an experience. And I taught that on the ground. I used to teach carrier landings on the ground, which is another whole different thing. Because at least when you're landing on a carrier, the carrier is going 35 miles an hour.
Yeah.
You know, which helps you go with your 80, whatever that relationship is.
Right.
But when you're on the ground, it's a very abrupt stop. You and that cable are married for a short period of time, and it's what they call a close relationship.
I bet. All right, we're with Ed McMahon here on the Big 550 KTRS. I do have to take a quick break here so we can make Jerry some money, and then we'll come back and talk some more.
I hope it's a Budweiser spot.
Well, it may very well be. I don't know. And don't forget, nextbigstar.com is the website. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.
There's only one place for knuckleheads in the news, the Harris Challenge, and absolutely no politics. It's Paul Harris on the Big 550 KTRS.
I tell you, you bring a big celebrity in the studio and everybody has to come in and say hi and get a picture and an autograph. Ed McMahon has not had a second free since he's been here.
I love it.
Don Johnson was just shooting a story with him for Channel 4 that'll air tonight, I'm sure. Channel 2 is here with the camera crew. Jerry Clinton is here from Gray Eagle Distributing and one of the owners of the Big 550 KTRS. The Reverend Mike Anderson, who runs our website, Ed, is here with a digital camera taking a picture, and this will probably be on our website, KTRS.com, later on.
All right. Well, tell him to look into nextbigstar.com.
Yeah. let's talk a little bit about the Tonight Show.
You know, this gentleman ought to meet this gentleman, because this fellow right here.
Who's this guy over here?
He's with Pro Webcast, and they are following me with a satellite truck all over the country, 40 cities in 40 days. Every day I do a satellite piece that goes up on the bird and goes back to their headquarters. Where's the headquarters? Fort Lauderdale? In Fort Lauderdale. And they're just keeping track of me. And on the 24th, I'm going to be aboard. We mentioned Carrier Landings last time we were chatting.
Yeah.
And on the 24th, I'm going to have such a thrill. I'm going to be on the Enterprise, that famous carrier in the Norfolk Naval Base. 5,000 people on the carrier. I'm going to do a USO show. I've got a little group that are going to start traveling with me when I get to Atlanta. Three girls, like TLC, they're called 3LW, Three Little Women. And they were with me for my launch in Hollywood on the Star Walk of Fame, and everybody loves them. They're only 13, 14, and 15, but they're adorable. You know, they just can do all the moves, and they've got a little patter between them. And you can't believe that they're just teenagers.
Wow.
But they're so good, and Sony has them. Epic Records has a CD out, 3LW. So they start traveling with me in Atlanta. We'll be going up the coast to all these different places. But on the carrier, we're going to do a satellite pickup that'll go to one of the morning shows live, and I'm going to find some talent.
Cool.
You know, Arthur Godfrey. I don't know that, Paul, if you're old enough to remember Arthur Godfrey, but he was a stalwart of the early days of radio and then, of course, in television. He was the greatest thing that ever happened to broadcasting, in my opinion. Anyway, he found Julius LaRosa on a naval base. He was a sailor, and he sang, and he said, hey, and he got him on his show and started his career. So I'm hoping somebody of that 5,000 contingent of men and women, maybe a nice, pretty Marine, who knows, might come along and be a singer. We'd get him on the show. It'd be wonderful.
That'd be great. Let's talk a little bit about the Tonight Show. We haven't talked about this for a while, and all these appearances. I've stayed away from it because you're involved in so many other things. But, you know, I mean, you're a host, you're an MC, you're a co-host of the telethon with Jerry, and you're also one of the all-time great second bananas. And I know you don't take that as an insult.
Not
because
at all.
You know how important it is and how hard it is to be a second banana.
What?
Here's my question for you. That was just my lead-up.
I almost answered the lead-up.
No.
Go ahead.
That was a declarative statement. Here's an actual question. How did you know when you were with Johnny or even on the telethon with Jerry that you had to step up and do a little bit more because you could see they were having an off day or an off moment as opposed to the times when you would just kind of sit back and let them run? How would you know that?
I guess it's instinct and trial and error. You know, we spent 4 years together, Johnny and I, on a game show called Who Do You Trust? And it was live. You had no chance to go back and fix it. And we never treated the Tonight Show like that. We never stopped and fixed it. We just went like we were on the air.
Right.
But this show was really live. It was on every day from 3:30 to 4 on ABC Network. In fact, it was the beginning of the daytime version of ABC. It's hard for people today to believe that there was a time when there was no ABC network.
Right.
There was a radio network on NBC, became the television network. CBS did the same thing. ABC kind of lagged behind. So we were the beginning of the daytime version of the ABC television network. This show was live from 3:30 to 4. And Johnny and I perfected a lot of the little interplay that we then took on the Tonight Show. That people that never saw us on the daytime didn't realize we spent 4 years honing all that patter and that relationship.
Right.
But you asked me the question of how you're in and how you're out.
Yeah.
I liken it to playing basketball. Two guys are going down the court. Michael Jordan's got the ball. He gets trapped. He throws the ball to me. I take it a few steps, throw it back to Michael Jordan.
Right.
And we work our way down the court, but he sinks the basket.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I work with Carson. We went back and forth. But he usually got the big laugh.
Because there were nights when you would just sit there.
I nailed him. Many nights. I remember, one night he came out, he was so upset. And he feigned this upsetness. You know, he'd come out and he said, in the middle of the monologue, he said, did you see that today? Did you see that paper? Johnny Carson is cool and aloof. I'm so sick and tired. Every time I pick up a column, it's cool and aloof.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they talk about. No, he was cool and aloof. You know why? He wouldn't do everybody's show. He wouldn't do everybody's column. And because of that, he was hard to get. So they would say, he wasn't cool to lose. But, I mean, in their eyes, he was.
Right.
But he loved to play it, you know, the role.
Yep.
So he'd say, cool and aloof. Aren't you sick of that, Ed? I know I am. He said, all right, here's the test. Ed has known me. How long have you known me, Ed? And I said, I know, 20-something years. Okay. Ed has known me for 20-something years. Ed, am I cool and aloof? And I let a pause develop, and then I said, no, my lord. I got him nailed, you know.
Yeah, that's it.
Now, no one else can say that but me. He can't say it. It's not funny if he says it.
Right.
It's only funny if I say it.
Exactly.
And then, of course, he gives me that look, and the camera, you know, all our cameras knew how the guys knew. So the director, right away, boom.
You got
the
shot.
They got that shot. I'm
sorry. And there were plenty of times also where he'd be doing something at the desk, and you could probably tell what the viewer at home couldn't, which was
it was not working.
He's lost his place, or it's not working.
Yeah, it's not working.
And so you realize I've got to step up here, and just with one sentence, you could get him going in a different direction.
Well,
right?
I'll tell you what I did one night. Hold up your papers like this.
Okay,
your little notes.
All right.
All right. He's doing a piece of business.
I'm just reading.
Really bad. Okay? He does about 8 jokes, and they're just each one is worse than the one before, and the whole you could smell the aroma in the studio. This piece of business was stinking, okay? So I look over, and I pick up his lighter. He always had a lighter and a box of cigarettes on his thing.
Right.
I pick up the lighter, I reach over, and I set fire to the bottle. Now, you got to be really brave. Here's the star of the show,
yes.
And I'm setting fire to his material. And I just set fire to it. Now, again, with a Carson take, you know, the camera's on him. The audience is dying.
Yeah.
I've set fire to the material.
Right.
He's holding the script, and he lets it burn right up the paper, right the whole paper burn, and he looks at that, and he's looking at the fire, and he looks at me, and it's still burning. He reaches over. He gets the waste paper basket. With great ceremony, he puts it up on the desk, and I'll give you what a family cohesive unit we had there. He puts the waste paper back on the desk, takes the burning paper over here, and he says, you're probably right. Like Laurel and Hardy.
Yes.
You know,
yep.
Another fine mess.
You
have
probably
gotten us
right.
Into.
Yeah.
He said, you're probably right. As the paper drops into the waste paper basket, Doc Severinsen starts playing taps. I mean, you can't write that.
No, that's perfect.
You put eight writers in a room for a month. They
right.
won't come up with that bit.
That's
I mean,
perfect.
That was perfect. But those are the things that I could do as the second banana that nobody else could do.
And does he come to you later and say, thank you, I
oh,
was
never,
dying
never,
out there?
Never. He would never do it. He just knew that I knew, that he knew and we both knew. I mean, there's a lot of no's in there,
right.
Knowing. But he just, that was my job. You know, Johnny was great. If you were doing your job, the best compliment you could ever get was you never heard a thing.
Mm-hmm.
That meant you were great. You were doing a great job. I'll tell you another funny story. We have how much more time?
As much time
10
as
minutes.
You want.
Another funny story, and a lot of people don't know this story, so I'll do this for my pal Jerry. I don't even think he knows this story. One night, it's Thursday night, we're in California. We were in a system where, in those days, they used to fly the tape back, if you can believe this. Now it's so electronic. But we used to do a show on Thursday night that they'd put on an airplane. There was a helicopter that would take the tape of the show, fly it to LAX, put it on an airplane. It'd fly back to New York. That was next night's show that they'd run on Friday night.
Wow.
So it's, and this is part of the story. It's important. It's Thursday night. Normally we were in California for like 3 weeks, 4 weeks. He always took the week off after that. He stayed in California for a few days. So it's Thursday night. It's the last show in California. He's going to be off a week, but I'm going to go to New York and be the MC with Jerry Lewis or, you know,
or whoever
David
the guest
Brenner,
host is
whoever
be.
Don Rickles, whoever it's going to be.
Right.
I go in for the next week. He leaves, and that's the I don't see him again till the following Monday, a week. Anyway, it's Thursday night, and we're saying goodbye. And about the next to the last commercial, he said, I'd like to see you in my dressing room right after the show. That was so unusual, so different. He would never do anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see you. And I never said that to me. So the show ended. I said, I wonder what this is all about.
Mm.
So the show ends. I go, and he's got people in. I'm waiting outside. So he's got people saying goodbye, sponsors, whatever. It's a great show, Johnny. Great to see you. We'll see you in 3 or 4 months. We're back. The people at the NBC there in the West Coast. Everybody left. Now he's by himself. I walk in. You know, he was a smoker for many years. So I walk into his dressing room. And he had two rooms with a door in between when we went to California, two dressing rooms. So I walk into the dressing room, and he lights up a cigarette. Again, very unusual. I forget. what is this all about?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I want to talk to you. I said, okay. So he said, I just want to discuss something with you. I said, all right. So he said, let's go in the other room. Now, the other room is exactly like the room we're in. I mean, there's two dressing rooms, you know, little cubbyhole dressing room, the right. two of them. So we go in the other room. And by this time, he snuffs out the cigarette. He likes another cigarette. So he said, I just want to tell you something. He said, I know what you're doing out there. So I'm thinking, what in the world?
Am I
getting canned? It's Thursday night. I won't see him again for another week. He's going to stay in California. He won't have to work with me in New York for the next week, and then I won't be working anymore. This is all running through your head.
Wow.
Because it's so ominous and so serious. And he said, I know what you're doing out there. So I, you know, don't say, I say, yeah. He said, I know how well you support me. I know how you fill in those. And what you were talking about, the second banana,
mm-hmm.
he's starting to give me praise. For the first time, I've been doing it now for 20-something years.
Right.
This is the first time he's ever telling me that I was doing a good job. He said, I know. And he starts to go. And I said, Johnny, look, I've got a dinner date. I don't have time for this. Excuse me. And I go out the door, right? Now, typical second banana. You
yes.
know, he's trying to pray, and I don't have time for this.
He's trying to have intimate moment.
Yeah. I says, I've got a dinner date. I says, I have people waiting. I says, now, I'm out the door, and I'm going down the hall. I don't want to get involved. I'm almost in tears. I don't want to get involved in this. He steps out of the door, right?
Yeah.
Now, he's still got the cigarette, and he's looking at me. He says, see? And he uses some colorful language. He says, you can't take a compliment any better than I can. That's the only time in our 34-year history together that he ever tried to compliment me, and I wouldn't let him.
Oh, that's great. That's great. That's great. I do only have a couple more minutes with you. Let me get the plugs in again.
Sure.
For nextbigstar.com. And by the way, I know you're going to be hanging out with Jerry Clinton
all day long
and running around with your
old buddy
here.
I hope he's got it. If he doesn't get it, I'll have to call Tony's and get a table for tonight. I hope he can get one. I don't know.
I brought some spending money. I know he doesn't have any on him. So.
Yeah.
Jerry is holding.
Yeah.
Well, used to say in the old days, you got any money? He says, I'm holding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's all you have
he
to
has whip out. Here's what all, they call whip out.
Right. Here's all you have to say all day long today, Ed. Mr. Clinton's taking care of this. That's it.
I'm with Mr. Clinton.
I'm with Mr. Clinton. There you go. Nextbigstar.com. By the way, Jerry, are you going to be auditioning? Do you have some super talent you're going to be doing today?
That's after midnight.
it
won't be
blue.
A part of the
in
regular
the
show.
Now, before you go, I've never asked you to do this.
Sure,
we've been doing radio together.
A long time.
Long time. You even came on a telethon that I was doing on my radio show at NBC in New York. 15 years
really?
Ago or
That's
something.
Great.
You helped me raise money after a All Mexican right. earthquake or something
right.
like that. And I know you've done lots of charity work here, but I've never asked you to do this. Do you remember the spiel for the vegetable slicer?
All right, forget about the $2 they were made to sell for. Look at this. I'm opening now, ladies and gentlemen, the famous Morris metric slicer. Look at that machine. You can adjust the blade. Look at this. I can adjust the blade so low. Look at it. I can make French fried potatoes. Look at this coleslaw. I take a half a cabbage. I can make coleslaw. Rigolilli, piccolilli. Look at this. Okay, look at this, slicing a cucumber. I spread it out in a nice array. Women love arrays. Look at that. They love food and arrays. There's another array. Did you ever see a woman slice a tomato? A woman takes a tomato. She lunges at it with a butcher knife. The poor tomato has a hemorrhage before it ever gets to the kitchen table. Watch this, friends. Look at these slices. Look at those beautiful slices of tomato. I'll make another array. I can adjust the blade so low. Look at this. Way down at the bottom, you can slice a tomato so thin you could read a tomato. You could read a newspaper, rather, through that tomato slice. I know a lady in Bayonne, New Jersey, had one tomato last her all summer long. These are good friends. Get one now. I don't blame you, madam. Hold your hand up high.
The Morris Metric
Morris
Vegetable
Metric slicer.
And you made like $500 a week.
I made
in what year?
1946, 47, 48. I was making $500 a week. And let me tell you how much money that was. You could buy a brand new car for $500. My rent for an apartment, a very nice apartment in Washington where I went to school, Catholic University, was $93 a month.
Mm-hmm.
You could buy a pair of pants for $2. So $500 a week was a tremendous amount of money. And when we went out on the fairs, we'd go to the fairs, you know, the Pennsylvania State Fair, the Ohio State Fair, we got $1,000 a week selling these gadgets.
Wow.
And then what was great about it, Paul, for me, going into television, when I arrived in television— I was not a guy that just had, you know, a voice that was acceptable on the air like you and I have. You know, we'll brag a little bit. We have good voices for this work. That was not enough. I was able to use my hands and speak at the same time. Now, a lot of people can't do that.
Yeah.
So when I got to television doing commercials, I could pour the beer. I could, you know, fix the pineapples on a plate. Mm-hmm. I could do all the things I had to do for the product I was selling. And it was great because I knew how to do that. And a lot of guys who came from radio who had those great mellifluous voices, you know, very deep. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're here at Park Central, you know, wherever we are. Anyway, instead of that, those guys couldn't use their hands. When it came to doing that next thing, I was already there from all those years of selling the famous Morris Metric Slicer.
The greatest salesman that company ever had, and many companies have had through the years, as a spokesperson, as a host, as a second banana, as an MC, and now as an online god, nextbigstar.com. Go check it out.
Online god.
And run down to Union Station. Ed, it has been a true pleasure.
Thank you, finally, to shake your hand in person. It's
absolutely
wonderful.
Thank you. I hope
anytime
to talk to you again soon.
Anytime you want me for anything, a fundraiser, telethon, whatever you're doing, call me. You got me on the radio. I'll plug. You know, I know how to plug.
Yes, I do. And I appreciate it.
All right,
Ed McMahon, ladies and gentlemen, on the Paul Harris Show. This is the Big 550 KTRS. Let me do some business, and we will come right back.